From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. This month, state officials announced a new program aimed at helping seniors struggling with reverse mortgages stay in their homes. The program is funded through federal dollars and is estimated to help some 2,500 elder homeowners around the state. We'll explore how the program works and how it can help seniors avoid foreclosure. Plus, Florida is among the 25 states that have chosen not to expand Medicaid coverage through the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Proponents of expanding the program have urged lawmakers to accept the more than $51 billion in federal money over 10 years to expand Medicaid, saying the state could end up saving money. However, other economic and health industry experts say expanding Medicaid would end up costing the state an additional $2 billion a year. We'll explore the pros and cons of expanding Medicaid in Florida. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Before last year's U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, expansion of Medicaid coverage to those earning less than 133% of poverty was a mandatory part of the federal health care law for all states, or else they'd face losing matching federal dollars for the program. However, the justice's ruling has allowed states to opt out of that requirement, and Florida is among the 25 states that have chosen not to expand the program. Federal Health and Human Services officials and other ACA proponents have urged Florida lawmakers to accept the more than $51 billion in federal money over 10 years to expand Medicaid to an additional roughly 1 million Floridians who currently don't qualify but are still don't earn enough to apply for health coverage through Obamacare. They say expanding Medicaid will help lower health care costs and facilitate the creation of new jobs in the state. However, other economic and health industry experts say expanding Medicaid would end up costing the state an additional $2 billion a year, in addition to nearly doubling the cost of private insurance premiums under the Affordable Care Act within 10 years. Joining me this morning to explore the many sides and many issues of Medicaid expansion is Dr. Stephen Parente, Managing Principal of Health Systems Innovation Network, which provides data analysis for health industry and healthcare policymaking. He's the Minnesota Insurance Industry Chair of Health Finance at Carlson School of Management and the Director of the Medical Industry Leadership Institute at the University of Minnesota. Stephen Parente, thanks for joining us this morning.
Happy to be here.
And we're also talking with Florida Gulf Coast University economics professor Dr. Dean Stansel, formerly of the Cato Institute. Dean, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on.
Also returning to the show by phone from D.C. is Joan Alker, co-executive director of research and research professor for the Center for Children and Families at Georgetown University's Health Policy Institute. Joan Alker, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
And if the name sounds familiar to WGCU listeners, Joan is related to WGCU's own All Things Considered host Valerie Alker, although I don't believe they've actually met in person. And president of the Florida League of Women Voters, Deirdre McNabb, is also with us this morning. Deirdre, thanks for your time.
Good morning, everybody.
And I invite our listeners to join the conversation with your comments and questions. Should Florida lawmakers accept federal dollars to expand Medicaid in the Sunshine State? Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or comment on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And Stephen and Dean, I wanted to start with a look at the study that the two of you collaborated on, indicating that Medicaid expansion in Florida would end up costing the state an additional $2 billion a year, even with that additional federal money. Tell us first, Stephen, how the study was conducted. Tell us how the simulation model that your findings were based on was created.
The model was created on set of models that were built and actually funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Department of Health and Human Services over the last 10 years. It's a microsimulation model that uses actual health plan choices on a wide set of plan choices that are available, and then uses also federal survey data to do the extrapolation as to what the impacts are going to be. In the case of Florida, about 4 years ago, we actually took the model and made it state-specific. We were doing analysis of shopping insurance across state lines, so that when the Supreme Court decision came forward last year, we were able to actually do an analysis of that. And the model that actually is presented is in an economics and health services research journal, actually called Health Services Research. It actually gives all the details out. So it's a nice peer-reviewed model, not just a casual off-the-cuff consulting exercise.
Sure, sure. Well, give us some of the key findings from your analysis.
Sure. The key thing is that there will be what we call this woodwork effect, where because there will be opportunities with the Medicaid expansion if it were to occur, Medicaid expansion might be much larger an impact on the state than expected. Now, on the one hand, people say that's great, people are getting more coverage. On the only concern that really is there is that if the state is not expecting to have that much additional services or that many additional people on there, the financial bites of the state for their share, which becomes 10% come 2018-2019, becomes an issue for state policy. That is the money available to finance, in the case of Florida, potentially $1 to $2 billion extra that wasn't expected to be financed before.
And your analysis indicates enrollment in private insurance would actually be reduced by nearly 1.5 million people next year and by 2.15 million people by 2023. Tell us about how you reached that conclusion. How does expanding Medicaid mean that there are going to be less people enrolled in private insurance?
Several things happen there. A lot of that happens in the employer-sponsored market. So there are a lot of folks that are in the workforce today that are near the Medicaid eligibility level, and with the Affordable Care Act having it be at about 133 to 137%, depending on how you count it, federal poverty line, they very well might be candidates to really go to Medicaid as opposed to having the firm pick them up. And that's one reason why we see the big switch, is that you have a lot of folks that might be in the retail sector. There could be stuff in food preparation where things are just above minimum wage for where folks would be, and so their wages and their take-home income would basically qualify them for Medicaid, and as a result, the firms would recognize that and essentially realize it's pretty expensive to keep them there. And everyone's talked about them switching over to the exchange. No one's really talked about them switching over to Medicaid, but that there's a good chunk of the population that would qualify and probably make that move if the expansion were to occur.
And Dean Stansel from here at FGCU, what was your role in helping with this analysis or providing data for the simulation model?
Sure. So Stephen did an excellent job there summarizing what we've done. And basically what we're trying to do here is roll out a state-level, state-by-state analysis. And so I was chosen here in Florida to help out with that process. And, you know, one of the things that I want to emphasize a little more heavily here, and Stephen kind of touched on this, but there's really this misconception that what Florida voted to do, along with 24 other states last year, is basically to turn down free money. But I want to make clear that's not the case. Look, sure, the first couple of years, the federal government's going to pick up the tab. But as Stephen mentioned, ultimately, we're going to be responsible for 10%. And how often, if you think about past history, how often are government cost estimates actually correct? Right? I mean, what's the likelihood that it's going to be 10% forever? It's likely to go up as federal budgets are under pressure, just like everyone else. So, at the end of the day, it's this extra $2 billion that's got to come from somewhere, from Florida state taxpayers, to cover this expansion if we go forward with that.
And you know, based on this analysis, I imagine both of you would conclude that a majority of Florida state lawmakers made the right decision in deciding not to expand the program, just based on Dean, as you just said, uncertainty about the future, as far as government estimates, and just the cost to taxpayer dollars here in Florida.
I'd certainly agree with that, and I think one of the things to keep in mind also is that it's not like Medicaid is providing this great quality of service for its constituents, and what we really need to get back to is a system where consumers have more control over their own health care decisions, and with Obamacare and with any sort of Medicaid expansion, we're moving in the opposite direction. We have a real problem in this country with the third party payer problem, in the sense that when you shop for your health care, consumers aren't cost conscious at all. They have no incentive to be so. Right, think about one of the other important needs that everyone has, of food. What if food were covered the same way the healthcare was, right? You had an insurance, you go to the grocery store, you pay a copay, and you just fill up your basket with whatever you want. What do you think is going to happen to the price of groceries? Well, it's going to go through the roof. And that's what we're seeing with healthcare over the years. And Obamacare and this Medicaid expansion would do nothing to fix that. In fact, it would make it worse.
And Joan Alker with Georgetown's Health Policy Institute. I know you've been studying this issue for some time now. Your initial look into the issue came about after the June 2012 U.S. Supreme Court decision on the Affordable Care Act. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Tell us about your findings, because I know you've brought them to, you know, state legislative committees as well.
Yeah, so what we found in our study is that, indeed, it would make economic sense as well as be very important for the many, many uninsured Floridians. Florida has one of the highest rate of uninsured folks in the country. For the state to accept the federal dollars and expand their Medicaid program, we estimate that about 1 million folks would get coverage and that, indeed, there are potential for state savings here, because I think it's important to realize that these folks are already getting some health care. Some of them are in your medically needy program that the state runs. Some of them are coming into emergency rooms in your mental health system. So our argument is that it's a smarter way to spend taxpayer dollars to make sure they get primary and preventive care up front so that their problems don't worsen and they wind up in the ER.
Okay. So kind of what you're saying is that folks, even if they don't aren't covered, are still going to be seeking care, and going to an emergency room is kind of the most expensive care there is out there. And they can't necessarily pay those bills. And so it kind of still the hardship is on everyone else.
That's right. And so when you say, I think Dr. Stantz will just say the money has to come from somewhere. Well, in that kind of case, the money is cost shifted. And it's cost shifted to other payers in the healthcare system, folks paying premiums, employers paying premiums, and hospitals. And hospitals are very much at risk if Florida does not expand your Medicaid program. That's true everywhere, but it's doubly true in Florida. Because you're going to see cuts to some of your federal funding. The Affordable Care Act was predicated on the Medicaid expansion, and assuming that uncompensated care would go down. But Florida's in double trouble because your Medicaid waiver is expiring this year, and you have some special funding for hospitals in that waiver. So I think state legislators are going to have to take a much harder look at this issue this year, given that additional loss of federal funding if Florida does not accept the federal dollars to expand Medicaid.
And just going back a little bit, the idea of expanding access to care through Medicaid, through taxpayer dollars while also saving money, just on its surface seems very counterintuitive.
Yeah, I want to go back to a point that Dr. Stansel and Dr. Parente made. And first of all, I should say here at Georgetown, we want to congratulate you at FGCU at having a great basketball team. But I do think your math is very, very fuzzy. And the model itself really doesn't reflect all of the other estimates I've seen on how many people would enroll. The state's own economists estimate about 1 million people. We estimate about 1 million people. But more importantly, we don't have to look to models that may be right or wrong. We can look at state experience. And when we look at states that have already expanded Medicaid versus those that haven't, the same percentage of folks ended up having private coverage. We did not see enormous crowd out. But what did change was that those states had fewer uninsured people. And that's good not only for those folks who are getting coverage, but for the whole system, as I talked about, the cost shifting for other payers in the system for whom the cost of the uninsured are being shifted.
But I guess that state made a conscientious decision to actually make that decision. It wasn't forced upon them. Part of the Supreme Court argument was that the federal government cannot essentially coerce the state to do this. And that, I guess that's sort of the central thought here. If what we're identifying is that there is, of course, a benefit the state will get in terms of those federal dollars that will come in, but the state has to recognize that it has to pay some part of it itself. That's all this estimate shows. And if the state hasn't made the appropriation decision to actually take that on, then the state is not yet responsible enough to basically affirm what the ACA says and be willing to move forward. That's what the Supreme Court more or less said. It's the state's decision to basically provide the bed for this thing to flourish. If the state chooses not to do that, it doesn't have to.
That's right. And your governor actually went ahead, and I should say Governor Scott, affirmatively decided that he did want to make this choice. And his own estimates, ultimately, he switched upon looking at the data, looking at the experience of other states, to believe that this would actually save money. And as I said, that's because the state's already spending some money on this population through your medically needy program, through your mental health system. And so there are potentially enormous benefits by accepting the federal dollars. And let me make another point. This model is predicated on the assumption that Florida will be wildly successful, far more successful than anybody the state's economists or I in our wildest dreams are expecting. Now, I can tell you from working on the issue of uninsured children, and we have a new report out today, that Florida does not have a distinguished history with respect to being wildly successful in enrolling children. Children are the single largest group of Medicaid beneficiaries. Florida actually ranks 49th in the country for the number of uninsured kids, and that's in large part due to the fact that the state has not been very aggressive about enrolling families. They haven't put out the welcome mat. They haven't reduced red tape. So I think the premise that the state is going to be wildly successful and get lots more people than they're expecting is very, very flawed when you look at the actual experience of the state of Florida.
But again, with the ACA, you know, one of the things that changed with the ACA is that the federal government has made available to all the states far more information about what income eligibility is with IRS records and other components. I mean, that's one of the things that is related to the health insurance hub, is to provide some of the information to the states to actually do that as well. So the states have tools to enroll people, and I imagine anybody working in the Florida state government who has a commitment to get Medicaid folks enrolled would use those new tools and new data that they haven't had before, and that's one of the factors of success that we model into this. Because the data is there. It's a much clearer identification algorithm than anything that's happened before 2013.
June? Okay, I'm going to just jump in because
Deirdre?
I'm actually living in Florida. This is Deirdre McNabb. I'm the president of the League of Women Voters of Florida. And unfortunately, the state, it's no surprise listening to Joan's numbers about enrollment of children, has bent over backward to make it difficult for people to enroll in the new health care plan, never mind Medicaid. They have, in fact, told departments of health around the state that they cannot use their facilities to educate people about the new health care plan. But I want to just back up a minute. I'm a bit mystified by the study that was done, particularly the comment that was made that we need to go back to the way we used to do it. A study that just came out very recently from the Commonwealth Fund found that after looking at 20,000 people and a number of different countries, that America had been spending far more than other countries per capita with a much lower return in terms of care than these other countries. So I don't think going back in time is the way we want to go. Medical care costs have been the largest cause of personal bankruptcy, and Florida has one of the biggest problems in the country with uninsured. So the question is, of course there is going to be some funds that are going to be required by the state. You mentioned $2 billion from your study. What we're talking about is getting the state getting their fair share of tax money that Florida citizens have already paid, $51 billion. So it would seem that anybody who has some business sense would look at that as an investment and say $2 billion for $51 billion sounds like a pretty good return on investment. We're a low-wage
state. Most of that money is deficit financed.
We're a low-wage state. We have everywhere, as I travel around this state, and I'm always on the road, I meet people left, right, and center with no health insurance, either because they are waiters, chambermaids, independent consultants, and they lie awake at night worrying about how they are going to cover their family. We now have an opportunity to take $51 billion, that is Florida taxpayer money. If we refuse it, it will go to other states to help them make their citizens healthier. It defies belief that our legislature, and it is just the House at this point because the governor and the Senate have said they will take it, has so far stonewalled this proposal. You look around the rest of the country, you see states like Arizona with a very conservative Republican governor who basically told her legislature she would shut them down unless they took the money. Ohio Republican governor said, let's take this money. Studies in Florida have shown we are looking at one of the biggest economic stimuluses to the state by bringing in $51 billion. 122,000 jobs, according to a University of Florida study, with an average salary of $50,000. The chamber, many of the chambers around the state are supporting it. Associated Industries is supporting it. This is something that just makes good economic sense for Florida, and if we don't take it, I fear, and experts fear, that it is going to drive up the cost of health care for everybody else with insurance exponentially, something we can ill afford in this state.
John, I want to pick up on something Joan said that relates to what Deirdre was talking about. And she was talking about the concept of cost shifting. I think it's real important. It's important to the success or failure of Obamacare. And I think there's a broader issue here with the concept of insurance. Mm-hmm. Right? Insurance is a financial instrument designed to mitigate risk. It's wonderful for things like protecting consumers from the cost of, say, getting in an auto accident. It's fundamentally silly to use it for everyday expenses like the cost of an annual physical, right? That's the cost of living. That's not a risk. It's not like there's a risk that you may have to go get an annual physical. If you choose to get an annual physical, that's the cost of living, right? So insurance, first of all, is a horrible way to cover health expenses, and it's a part of the reason with this third-party payer problem that the costs are rising so fastly. But on cost shifting, listen, the only way Obamacare works is if the young and healthy, some of whom are choosing not to buy health insurance because it's not a sensible decision economically for them, if they don't sign up and jump into the risk pool and subsidize the old and unhealthy, it's almost like a house of cards and the whole thing falls apart before it gets started. And there's good signs that the young and healthy are saying, hell no, we won't go. You know, we're not going to sign up for this plan that's destined for failure.
That is anecdotal reporting. In fact, I read this morning that there are a number of groups that are, and some funded by the Koch brothers, to try to dissuade young people from buying insurance. But I have not seen any statistics to that regard. And I speak to young people all over the state of Florida, and those that I speak to are either on their parents' health insurance plan or want to be sure that they have health insurance. So I would like to hear if you have backup for what you're saying other than anecdotal report.
It's very early to look at the enrollment data.
I see young people in class every day. So I see young people as well, and they give me their opinions, and we talk about these issues in class. And so,
So let me jump in and say the early data we have from the states that are expanding Medicaid is that they've actually been able to ramp up enrollment very quickly, and that's not surprising given that Medicaid is a program that's already working for folks. And I think, you know, this assumption that somehow we have to make Medicaid beneficiaries more cost conscious because they might be overutilizing services is completely erroneous and belies a real misunderstanding of the financial realities facing, let me just finish my point, facing $20,000 for a family of four. You don't have a lot of income to be able to pay for a physical, to pay for your prescriptions. And then you have to ignore them, and your conditions get worse.
The idea is that the physical wouldn't cost as much if the doctor knew that the patient was paying attention to the cost, right? You ask your doctor how much it costs, they don't know, right? They have no way of knowing. And so if the system was changed so that there were market incentives in place, doctors wouldn't charge as much. They couldn't. They wouldn't be able to get away with it.
Deirdre, I wanted to jump in at this point because I know this is something that you've kind of got your finger on the pulse of. We know that this, lawmakers in Florida didn't obviously approve the expansion in this year's legislative session. But in 2014, when lawmakers reconvened in Tallahassee in March, how likely is this to come back up?
Unfortunately, I have to say, I think because it's an election year, we may not see the level of enthusiasm that we had hoped. However, I have no doubt that Florida will eventually take this money because much like when Medicaid was began, only 25 states decided to take it at that point. Change takes time. And while the healthcare rollout has not been picture perfect, it's had many bumps. This is something that is happening for America. There are going to be bumps in the road, and I believe that one by one we will see states begin to take the money. Why? Because it is benefit not just to their low-wage working people, but it will be an economic stimulus to the state. We deserve in Florida to get our fair share. The idea of sending $51 billion to other states to make people healthier in Wisconsin makes no sense at all. And we recently had a teleconference with healthcare experts who said that if we don't take the money in Florida, people with health insurance could expect to see their premiums go up by as much as 30%. Why? Because somebody has to pay for the uninsured getting the most expensive care available, that is given in the emergency room. So we have got to move to a system where everybody has health insurance and is getting preventive care rather than letting things get to a point where we are dealing with multi-thousand doctor bills and emergency room bills that are not necessary. So it's a dollars and cents issue. Yes, the state will have to pay some contribution after the first 3 years, but these are dollars that are well spent to make us a more competitive state, so that companies will come here knowing that they won't be dealing with much higher health care costs than other states where they have accepted the money. This is simple, good dollars and cents for Florida. We need to make sure that taxpayer money that has been put toward this effort stays to keep Floridians healthier.
You know, interesting that you mentioned, Wisconsin back there. I understand they were one of the states that have not accepted the money, but that, Governor Walker there is looking to actually, bring people who are on the Medicaid program in that state, into the health insurance exchanges. But part of the reason they're able to do that is because their Medicaid benefits are already considerably more generous than Florida's regarding who can qualify.
That's correct.
I would just like to make one other point. I was up in Tallahassee last week and visiting with the Florida Hospital Association, and I heard two statistics which I thought were very interesting. And that is, these are national statistics, that the average person spends $1,600 more for a hospital visit to cover the cost of those who are uninsured. And they pay an average of $1,200 a year for health insurance more to cover the cost of those who do not have health insurance. So that is why it is so critically important to ensure, with the funds that are available to us, this $51 billion that is waiting to come into the state of Florida, that Florida taxpayers have paid, is used to cover the uninsured so that we can begin to slow the rise in the cost of health care.
Can I make one comment?
Go ahead, Stephen.
All the studies that you're making, that you've referenced, are not peer-reviewed studies. The Commonwealth Foundation is a very good foundation. I worked with them for a long time. I was actually the teaching assistant to Karen Davis, the former president. But most of those things are out as white papers. Almost everybody at the Commonwealth Fund, to be very clear, if you're going to bash the Koch brothers, let's call the Commonwealth Fund where it is. All of the people that are in leadership there are Democratic contributors. They've only had one Republican contributor in 1992, who was the CFO. It's not that independent. And at least the model that we're putting out there, we've taken the time to put in the peer-reviewed literature. The things you're talking about, you're making very compelling arguments, and honestly, I wish they were true in the sense that I could find them in journal articles that are peer-reviewed at a high level.
You know, Dr. Prente, though, your model does not reflect the reality of Florida and the reality of the actual real-life experience of states that have expanded Medicaid. We have not seen the huge levels of crowd-out you predicted, and we certainly haven't seen Florida enroll, millions more people than expected and be a star in that result. So I think it's silly to say that a model is more valuable than actual state experience that we have and we can turn to and that elected officials can look at to base their decisions.
But to be fair, and I agree with you that I'm not trying to say the model is the perfect world that's going to present everything, but we are talking about an ACA, some very unprecedented issues. I live across the way from Wisconsin. I live in Minnesota. We have in Minnesota the most expansive Medicaid program in the nation. It took 15 years to get there. It took cooperation from the private insurers to do it, but it also took a culture in the state that's 100 years old, that's probably more filled with Scandinavians and Germans looking at collective action together, and a populist vote to make that happen as well. I think that what's happening in Florida is a different scenario. It did not grow up organically. It's a lot of money that's going to get hot decked in, and what my concern is, and this is what the model, I think, reflects. And the model could be very much wrong about this, but it's something to at least keep a watch out, and I hope it is wrong, is that there are employers that when they see that there is that much money available for a population to basically get off their rolls, they will take that opportunity and expand Medicaid bigger at a scale that we otherwise never thought they would in that environment. It's just, we don't quite know what the scale of this program is going to do with the Medicaid expansion for states that have not organically gotten there on their own which includes Massachusetts, which is the model for this whole thing. Right. It includes New York State.
Dr. Parente, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time for today's program, but I want to thank everyone on my panel today, Florida League of Women Voters President Deirdre McNabb, FGCU Economics Professor Dean Stansel, Dr. Stephen Parente, Managing Principal at Health Systems Innovation Network, and Joan Alker with the Center for Children and Families at Georgetown University's Health Policy Institute. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, John. Take care now. Bye-bye.
There's more information on the show, as well as an archive of past shows on our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. This is WGCU Fort Myers, WMKO Marco, NPR for Southwest Florida.